You're not going out to eat goat cheese anywhere?
No,
this morning?
No, I'm having a goat cheese free morning.
I could use some, actually. Well, it is straight up 11 o'clock. This is a pledge drive section. It is also a holiday weekend for people that represent that way. Be charitable. Be altruistic. Don't listen to Ayn Rand and her virtue of selfishness. Dan in Champagne. So I guess
he says he really likes what you guys are talking about, the teachers.
Okay. Well, it's a complicated circumstance, but somebody's got to do it, and Dave's got the credentials in that regard. So opinions are those of the speakers. Free speech radio, open discussion. See what you can do to help out in any way you can. If you got time and not money, you're welcome to contribute in that fashion as well. Kick it off.
Hello, folks, and welcome to the April 23rd, 2011 edition of the Illinois World Labor Hour, brought to you over the air by WEFT 90.1 FM radio in Champaign, Illinois, and webcast worldwide at weft.org. The views and opinions expressed during this hour of programming are those of the speakers and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of WEFT's management or board of directors or of Prairie Air Incorporated. Now here's Tom to acknowledge some of our underwriters.
This hour of programming is being brought to you by the listeners of WEFT and by the Brotherhood of the Maintenance Way. The Brotherhood of the Maintenance Way employees are proud to continue their support for the Illinois World Labor Hour. A democratic union, the BMWE, celebrates the voice for labor on WEFT. It is their hope, our hope, that all workers may share the same benefits that we enjoy, such as living wages, job security, away-from-home expense pay, early retirement, Canadian-style health insurance, and guaranteed year-round work. And the Illinois World Labor Hour is supported in part by you listeners of WEFT and by the AFL-CIO of Champaign County. The AFL-CIO represents the interests of more than 7,000 workers in Champaign County and more than 13 million workers nationwide. Recognizing that strong workers build strong communities, the AFL-CIO is proud to support community radio in East Central Illinois.
Thanks, Tom. I'm your host, Bob Polesny, here today with co-host Tom Thomas, who will have some workers' interest news for us, and later in the show, the Labor Hour Cultural Corner, and Tom's poem of the week from his book, Cries for Justice, is entitled An Ode to Working Souls. Also here with us today is co-founder of the Illinois World Labor Hour, Bill Gorell. He'll be here with some additional labor news and commentary. And Dave and Jason are laboring, doing other things outside the office today.
Lucky guys.
Yeah, they'll be back next week. I believe next week we've got a big show planned because it'll be right before May Day. So yeah. I think Dave is planning on being here and having a couple special guests for us. So tune in again next week. I believe we'll have Gene Vanderport and Jermaine Light on with us. And Jermaine can recount some of her experiences up in Madison, Wisconsin at the protests up there.
And yeah, then when she was there.
And then the next week she called in from Springfield, Illinois.
Yeah.
So we'll get caught up on a lot of good, important issues here dealing with teachers and things like that. So, all right, now here's Tom to kick off this week's edition of Workers' Interest News.
British Petroleum is suing the maker of the device that failed to stop last year's enormous and calamitous Gulf of Mexico oil spill. BP alleges negligence that the oil giant says actually contributed to causing the disaster. The British company stated in papers filed in federal court in New Orleans last Wednesday that Cameron International provided a blowout preventer with a faulty design and in doing so caused an unreasonable amount of risk that something would go wrong. The lawsuit, filed on April 20th, the first anniversary of the spill, seeks damages to help BP pay for the tens of billions of dollars in liabilities it has incurred from the disaster. 11 workers were killed when the Deepwater Horizon rig exploded, leading to more than 200 million gallons of oil pouring from an undersea well into the Gulf. A testing company hired by the government had determined last month that the blowout preventer was faulty, but it was also cited other problems. It also cited other problems that could have contributed to what happened.
Okay, thanks, Tom. And yeah, this is about a year after the BP oil spill. Yeah,
the 20th was the anniversary.
Right, and life is still messed up for a lot of the people down there in the Gulf and those communities, the fishermen.
Especially the fishermen.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of hazardous materials they had to deal with in the cleanup, the dispersants and things like that.
Yeah.
And I came across a story this week, too, that talked about they started out early in the week and they said that BP was getting a $10 billion tax write-off to cover their losses. But by the end of the week, they had amended that to say it was $13 billion tax write-off, you know. Then I came across another story here relating on the same instance, and this is Transocean, the actual company that was drilling the well out there. And Transocean had its, quote, best year in safety performance despite the explosion of its Deepwater Horizon rig that left 11 dead and oil gushing into the Gulf of Mexico, the world's largest offshore rig company said in a securities filing on Friday. Accordingly, Transocean's executives received two-thirds of their target safety bonus. Safety accounts for 25% of the equation that determines the yearly cash bonuses, along with financial factors, including new rig contracts. This payout contrasts with that for 2009, when the company withheld all executive bonuses after incurring four fatalities that year, to underscore the company's commitment to safety. In a filing on executive pay, Transocean said, quote, "Notwithstanding the tragic loss of life in the Gulf of Mexico, we achieved an exemplary statistical safety record," close quote. Based on the total rate of incidents and their severity, we recorded, quote again, "We recorded the best year in safety performance in our company's history." This despite the fact that 11 people were killed out there on that, and 9 of them worked for Transocean. Says here, a spokesman for Transocean said, "The statements of facts in the proxy speak for themselves, but they do not and cannot adequately convey the extent to which everyone at Transocean is keeping the families of the men who lost their lives at Macondo in their thoughts and prayers as we approach the first anniversary of the incident." 9 of the 11 dead worked for Transocean. They go on to have some statistics there and whatnot, but it's really quite incredible that a year later these people can be getting bonuses for a great year of safety when 11 workers were killed out there.
And they wipe out a large percentage of our seafood from the Gulf.
Exactly. Quite astounding. So, anyway, Tom, you got another story there?
Yeah, demand for food stamps, formerly called the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, increased dramatically during the recession. Between 2007 and 2010, Illinois' participation in the program grew some 32%, and that was the fifth smallest increase in the nation. The Illinois program now totals $2.8 billion a year, with all the money coming from the federal government. Cost-cutting legislators want Illinois to join a national movement to fight fraud by adding identification photos to state food stamp cards. Some opponents of the idea say it amplifies a negative stigma about food stamps and targets the poor instead of addressing the real problem. Legislation to study the cost of adding photos to link cards triggered some heated argument during the House debate, including accusations that the goal was to discourage people from signing up for help. Conservatives said they're pushing for the study to determine the cost of adding the photos because they doubted the Democratic-controlled legislature would approve a bill actually requiring the photos. An initial estimate from the Department of Human Services puts the price tag between $2 and $4 million for implementation and equipment such as cameras, plus recurring expenses. Bob?
Okay, thanks, Tom. Here's a story out of the New York Times. Once again, the excellent labor reporter Stephen Greenhouse says, in the largest unionization vote involving federal employees, the nation's airport screeners voted in favor of unionizing, but federal officials said on Wednesday that there would be a runoff because neither union on the ballot received a majority of the votes cast. Federal officials said 8,369 security screeners, who are employees of the Transportation Security Administration, the TSA, had voted to join the American Federation of Government Employees, while 8,095 had voted to join the National Treasury Employees Union. The vote against unionizing was 3,111. Since none of the three choices received a majority, the screeners will choose between the two unions in a runoff election that will omit the option of not unionizing. The winning union will represent the nation's 44,000 TSA screeners in contract negotiations. The runoff will be held over the next 2 months. Labor leaders were pleased that 84% of the screeners who voted in favor of joining a union, saying it showed that many government employees still wanted a bargain collectively, even when public employees are on the defensive in places like Wisconsin and Ohio, where state leaders have largely curtailed the right of public sector unions to bargain. Bill?
Yeah, have you guys done a story on the a vote coming up for, I believe it would be Railway Workers Act, but it basically covers about everybody in transportation, including airlines, I think. And what they would want to do is that if anybody was organizing a union and they had the certification vote, than any people in the bargaining unit who just did not show up to vote, then that would be counted as no votes.
Yeah, I think there was something going on like that in some of the airline unions, too.
Well, yeah, because that act covers them. The Railway Act covers the airlines. It covers the railways. I don't know if it covers buses or not. I don't think it covers semis. But, yeah, I mean, that's just ridiculous. You know, I mean.
Well, here you had 16,000, over 16,000 voting in favor of unionization and 3,000 against. So,
wow, amazing.
He said 84% were in favor of joining a union, 84% of the votes. Although, in this instance, it sounds like about 20,000 people voted, and then this union contract will represent the nation's 44,000 TSA screeners. So maybe in this instance, 20,000 people didn't show up to vote either.
Yeah, that's and there's another thing here, and if my computer ever starts back up and actually will work on the internet, maybe I'll look this up. But I've been hearing a lot of Republicans will be saying things like, well, the federal government, you know, they're using so much for unions, but there's nobody outside of the post office that's unionized in the federal government, which is a complete, I guess that would be news to the people who run the AFGE, or the Association of Federal Government Employees Union.
Right, or this other one, National Treasury Employees Union. I think it says there that they already represent like 40,000 people in the Treasury Department.
Yeah, that's just like what was that statement the other day by anyway, he had to come back. Oh yeah, it was about Planned Parenthood. This one Republican senator, I think, but was it Kyle from Arizona? I'm not sure, but anyway, this Republican senator came out and said something like, "Oh, 90% of Planned Parenthood is for
abortions."
Yes. Is for abortions, and then his people come back out later and say, "Oh, well, that wasn't meant to be a factual statement."
Yeah, Stephen Colbert kind of made fun of that, you know.
God,
non-factual statements, you know. So, how about if we go to a little music here? We opened
that
the show with
meant to be the a truthy statement, as Colbert might say. It was actually truthy, but it wasn't true.
Yeah. We opened the show, as we usually do, with Pete Anderson doing Working Class, and here's a song from Pete Anderson's new CD, Profit for Profit.
Televangelizing me. Yeah, and I don't need no profit for profit. Televangelizing me. He's got his hand in my pocket. I got salvation for free. Got nothing against Mecca, man. I got nothing against Rome. Well, I got nothing against Mecca. Got nothing against Rome. And I got nothing against swing low, sweet chariot. Come in to carry me home. Coming to carry me home. Thank you.
a walk out in the woods. I lean up against my favorite tree. I take a walk out in the woods, and I lean up against my favorite tree. I hang my head and close my eyes, get nearer my God to thee. I don't need no temple in the jungle, I don't need no comet in the sky. I don't need no temple in the jungle, no comet in the sky. I don't need no sign upon the mountain to help my spirit fly. Gonna help my spirit fly.
And we're back. And
yeah, is this microphone back?
Yeah, it's working fine now.
Well,
Bill.
Good job, Bob.
Yeah, it pays to crawl around on the floor down there once in a while. I don't know what we're going to talk about next because I was working on microphones. So, Bill, you got something quick?
Well, I think I'm internet enabled again, and I'm going to be looking for Andrew Breitbart telling a bunch of people to go to hell.
Ah, well, I do have something here that I kind of prepared, and I could go to that right now, I suppose. You know, Sarah Palin was up in Madison last
week. This has to do with that. He was the warm-up act for Sarah Palin.
Oh, was he?
Yes.
Was he?
And anyway,
another weft airshifter happened to make a run up to Madison last week, and he came back and kind of gave me a little bit of a eyewitness report. And he said, well, he told me he thought there was maybe about 1,000 people there from the Tea Party. But...
And I heard 9,000 anti-Tea Party,
yeah,
anti-baggers.
That's what he said, too.
Anti-Teanderthals.
Yeah, and he said that the anti-Tea Party were normal, organized people, teachers, firemen, union workers, and...
There's a thing here in Champaign over at Westside Park on Monday where a bunch of people, it was election day and all, maybe it was Tuesday when they had the... get together, but
it was tax day. That's
tax
their
day.
Whole thing. They get together on tax day.
That's right. That's Monday, right. The 18th was tax day this year.
Right.
Yeah. And in any event,
what I was getting at was they said in the paper that there were a whole lot less people this year, and the way it was written, I think it was because the Tea Party was there. The Tea Party had not been there. There had been a lot more people there.
Yeah. Well, we're going to play a little clip here of Sarah Palin with a few of her
thoughts. Well,
there wouldn't
have been an event.
And then the crowd reaction to it here. So this is a little bit of Sarah Palin in Madison, Wisconsin.
The line has been drawn in the sand, and I am proud to stand with you today in solidarity. And that's integrity. And you know, that's something that's sorely missing in the Beltway today. That is not courage, that's capitulation.
Anyway, there were a few comments from Sarah Palin, and then some of the crowd reaction there. I heard that some of the Tea Partiers were quite upset that the other protesters far outnumbered them and made a far bigger impression. The anti-Tea Party people were holding up their usual signs saying, Fox lies, and Fox will report that I'm not really here. But apparently there were some middle-aged women there screaming at some of the anti, take it's on hold there, Tom. See if you can just. Yeah, we're getting a pledge here, so one of us is going to have to answer the phone while we're talking on the air. So anyway, they were being rude and irate to some of the anti-Tea Party protesters, telling them that they were interfering with their free rights, their right to free speech and stuff. And the anti-Tea Party people just simply said, bring more people next time.
And yeah, well, over it said in the paper, over the last couple of years, there are like several hundred people there in a year or two before
Westside
each
Park.
Year on, yeah, on tax day. But like Bill said, only 35 people showed up this year.
Yeah.
And I think that had to do with the Tea Party and their nut jobs.
Yeah. Well, that's
what I'm saying is, if there wasn't a Tea Party event, there wouldn't be anybody at the park.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
There you go.
I mean, if somebody else was having an event, but... And I was also... I'm sorry, folks.
Simultaneously taking a pledge. But I was talking to Dave Johnson on the phone last night, and he said there was a picture in the paper of some friends of ours who are actually left-wing radical activists, and also that one friend of ours was passing around Socialist Forum literature, Socialist Forum, which is a group in a town here, and that people were receiving it fairly well. So maybe
good.
The people that showed up just, I don't know, didn't know what was going on or...
Well, you know, amazingly, David Johnson came up with a poll about a year ago that said that of people that were in the 18 to 24-year age group, over 50% of them thought that socialism was a better way of economy than our current capitalistic system. And that's amazing.
Yeah, I can only agree with that.
Because you would never hear that in any kind of corporate media, that's
no.
for sure. But anyway, again, the WEFT airshifter that was up there in Madison said that he was treated rudely by Tea Party people up there, too, that they shouldered him several times trying to get past him and barge their way through the crowd and stuff. But
yeah, I can understand why people are so drawn to the Tea Party, because I have not heard a single good thing about them yet.
Well, I'm all for lower taxes, but they're absurd.
Well, yeah.
Our taxes are really low right now. As the folks on News from Neptune were pointing out, you know, our tax rates right now are lower than they've been for 40 years and stuff. So, anyway, we're just about to that time in the program, I guess. So we might as well just go to Tom's poem and the cultural corner here as soon as I get his background music loaded up here. And we'll go with Tom's poem. And Tom's poem for this week from his book, Cries for Justice, is entitled An Ode to Working Souls.
All righty, thank you.
Tom?
Who built the roads across our land? Who laid the rails coast to coast? Who raised the cities tall and rich and built this land of which we boast? Who works to keep the roads maintained? Who drives and repairs the railroads? From carpenters to mechanics, it's working souls who bear the loads. With sharp axe and saw and hammer, with shovel and hoe and with plow, 'twas working souls who built this land we gratefully inhabit now. But for all the sweat, blood, and tears, what reward is given today? Who controls the economy that's taking our jobs away? In order to live and survive, all working souls must still work on, especially those with families. What can they do when the jobs are gone? As cold and windy winter nights are killing people without heat, all CEOs do need to know what it's like to live in the street. That is where your bankers belong, in the streets with the hungry throng. They need to hear the painful song of all the souls that they've done wrong. An Ode to Working Souls was written at the Poets Loft in Champaign, Illinois on November 21st, 2008 and was brought to you live today, April 23rd, 2011, here on the Illinois World Labor Hour on WEFT 90.1 FM in Champaign, community radio for East Central Illinois.
Thanks, Tom. And we should mention Labor's View TV every Sunday on cable channel 6 at 4 p.m. features Jim Iman, who I believe just called in with a pledge there, and one of our other co-hosts, David Johnson, every Sunday, 4 p.m. on cable channel 6. And I should mention as well that we are in the middle of our pledge drive, and we'd be happy to take pledges, even though we're a little uncoordinated around here trying to do that when we're all talking on the air, but we'll do whatever we can. This is community radio. We are volunteer operated, listener supported, and we could surely use whatever help people would want to give us. We do offer an alternative viewpoint on many of today's issues. We have some great music programs on here, some great public affairs programs, and these people here put their heart and soul into keeping the station running and presenting alternative viewpoints for you folks out there.
And it's truly a community radio station because it's the community that keeps us on the air.
Definitely, definitely. So how about if we go to a little bit of Hightower radio news here, and it looks like he's got something, well, how about if we do the one from about the Tea Party rebels are quickly tamed, so
yeah,
see what Hightower's got to say here today.
They came, they saw, they conquered. This line pretty well sums up a little reported but important story about the new Tea Partiers in the U.S. House of Representatives. No sooner had they arrived than the corporate lobbying corps came to visit, saw what these supposed rebels were made of, and quickly conquered them without a fight. The forces of big business needed only to lay out some campaign cash, and quicker than you can say business as usual, the budding lawmaker snatched up the money and immediately began carrying the lobbyist corporate agenda. Check out the Financial Service Subcommittee, which handles legislation affecting Wall Street bankers. Five Tea Partiers got coveted slots on this panel, and all five were suddenly showered with big donations from such financial lobbying interests as Goldman Sachs. Now, all five are sponsoring bills to undo parts of the recent reforms to rein in Wall Street excesses. Steve Strivers of Ohio, for example, hauled in nearly $100,000 in just his first 2 months in office, 85% of it from the special interests his committee oversees. He insists that the cash he took from Goldman Sachs and others has nothing to do with his subsequent support of bills that Goldman is lobbying so strongly for. Stivers claims that his sole legislative focus is on jobs for Ohio's 15th district. Really? Among the Deform the Reform bills that Steve is carrying is one to let Wall Street giants avoid disclosing the difference in what the CEO is paid and what average employees make. Another would exempt billionaire private equity hucksters from regulation. I can see that these bills are great job extenders for the barons of Wall Street, but how do they create a single job in his district? This is Jim Hightower saying, this stuff does nothing but shelter the greed-headed banksters who wrecked our economy. Is that what the Tea Party Rebellion was all about?
To get more of Jim Hightower's populist take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to, visit www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Okay, we're back.
Wall Street calls the economic...
WEFT 90.1 FM in Champaign and streaming at weft.org. And Bill?
Yeah, I want to say something here. I'm looking for a particular cut of this Andrew Breitbart deal where he was at Madison, Wisconsin at the big Tea Party thing the other day. He is a warm-up act for Sarah Palin. And what I'm finding right now is what looks like what I saw on the CBS News the other night. And what I'm looking for is a video that was shot on a consumer camera back in the crowd. And it shows you a lot of the signs, a lot of the anti-Tea Party protesters. And you can hear them... whereas this one that's sort of a network feed, I think they're actually even plugged into the PA system rather than taking it as a microphone.
Well, I can tell you one thing. You know, you can search on YouTube. Just do a search on YouTube for best Sarah Palin speech ever.
Oh, yeah.
And that's where I took my little clips of the crowd noises because she was being shouted down vociferously. And they had bullhorns. They had... those vuvuzelas.
Vuvuzelas,
yeah.
Why are those? I remember those like when I was, 35 years
yeah,
ago.
Yeah, well, I was going to say when I was about 8 now. Years old. Yeah, now they're really popular again. And, yeah, they were shouting at her, shame, shame, and go home and stuff like that. So, yeah, that's on YouTube, and you can find that for yourself. It's just search for best Sarah Palin speech ever, And it's about a minute long, and it's just vociferous crowds chanting against her.
Well, I mean, see the CBS story. They didn't, they just mentioned that there were counter protesters. They didn't mention that they outnumbered the idiots
by 7-1, something like that.
Yeah,
10-1,
7-9-1.
Yeah,
or that. And then they didn't even talk to any of those, to the anti-Tea Party people.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they did stop and talk to at least one Tea Party person besides showing Sarah Palin speak. They didn't show Andrew Breitbart speak.
Yeah.
And I was just sitting there thinking, all of these decades when you'd heard about CBS being the liberal news network because of Walter Cronkite.
Left-leaning news and stuff.
And Dan Rather.
Yeah.
And it's like they didn't even put up a pretense. I mean, it wasn't even Fox fair and balanced. It wasn't even a pretense of being fair. It wasn't even the usual pretense where they have, like, on a global warming story, which, 99% of the scientists in the world, are sure that this is happening and it's caused by human activity, burning of carbon-based fuels. But, if they have a story about it, they still have to have the one scientist left on the entire planet who doesn't believe this, so that it's balanced.
So they can be fair and balanced. Yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's balanced like, 99-1.
Right.
It's just ridiculous to give that person equal weight. And this was the complete opposite. They had 9-1 anti-Tea Party people there, and those people don't even get a hearing at all.
Yeah, yeah.
I just happened to see that because I was visiting my father, and it just happened to be on the news. I don't watch, these
corporate news
shows. I don't even watch hardly any TV news.
Yeah, me neither. I get most of my news off the internet.
Yeah, it's probably partly because I used to work at a TV station, and I know, that the people who work there don't really know anything.
Yeah,
all they can do is repeat what other people tell them.
Tom used to work at a TV station too.
Yeah, that's what got me fired was
saying what you were supposed to say.
Yeah, you can say it that way.
How about if we go to a little bit of Workers Independent News? We'll go to their Friday story here. They get a little bit about the Boeing situation down there in South Carolina and the NLRB and some recall petitions for politicians up there in Wisconsin. So, Workers Independent News.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. The National Labor Relations Board has found that Boeing illegally transferred an airplane production line to a non-union plant in South Carolina in retaliation for past strikes by its unionized workforce in Washington State. The NLRB action seeks to force Boeing to return the production to Washington. International Association of Machinists spokesperson Connie Kelleher.
The bottom line is that Boeing broke the law by trying to intimidate workers for exercising their federally protected rights. Boeing's own words convicted them. We had two notebooks about 7 inches thick of public statements by Boeing executives that were threatening our workforce and actually also threatening the workforce in South Carolina. Since we originally filed the charge, they've continued to do that. And even last week, when they knew this decision was pending, their spokesperson made another comment that they were going to put more work in South Carolina to retaliate for strikes. In all 50 states, that's illegal. Had we allowed Boeing to break the law and go unchecked in their actions, it really would have given a green light for all of corporate America to discriminate against union members, and it would have became management's new strategic template to attack their workforce.
By day's end, 5 Republicans in Wisconsin and 3 Democrats will have had recall petitions filed against them. Jesse Russell reports.
In Wisconsin, there are petitions now filed to recall 4 Republican state senators and 3 Democrat state senators. By the end of the day today, it will likely be 5 Republicans set for recall. The Democratic Party of Wisconsin plans to challenge the petitions collected for their senators due to what party chair Mike Tate calls mercenary tactics. Tate said the campaigns to recall Democrats have seen intimidation and deception used to collect signatures. He also cited a case where felons have been hired to collect signatures by the Republican Party of Wisconsin. Tate said that his party's campaigns to recall Republicans have moral integrity.
Our recall effort has laughed the Walker machine, not merely because our side has more enthusiasm, has worked harder, and is better organized, but because we possess the moral authority of an energized population who want to see a free and fair Wisconsin.
Democrat legal counsel Jeremy Levinson said he has more affidavits than he can count of citizens saying they were deceived into signing petitions.
Their effort is really driven by paid signatures, paid signature collectors, circulators, and frankly, just lying to voters in the streets in order to get their signatures on the paper.
This newscast made possible in part through underwriting from the AFL-CIO and by the National Association of Letter Carriers. You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
And another great weekly feature there from Workers' Independent News. And I believe Bill's got a little bit of story that he wants to go over here, something to discuss.
What this is, we're just talking about the Tea Party, and it reminds me a lot of this sort of introduction here called Fascism, What Is It? By Leon Trotsky. And he wrote these, this was extracts from a letter to an English comrade written November 15th, 1931. I understand he started studying the fascist movement when it began in the 20s. And he's put together a pretty good description, statement, so on of it. And it's at Marxist.org is where you can find this.
Okay.
Anyway, it goes, what is fascism? The name originated in Italy. Were all forms of counter-revolutionary dictatorship fascist or not? Parentheses, that is to say, prior to the advent of fascism in Italy. Anyway, the fascist movement in Italy was a spontaneous movement of large masses with new leaders from the rank and file. It is a plebeian movement in origin, directed and financed by big capitalist powers. It issued forth from the petty bourgeoisie, the slum proletariat, and even to a certain extent from the proletarian masses. Mussolini, a former socialist, is a, quote, self-made man, unquote, arising from this movement. The genuine basis for fascism is the petty bourgeoisie. In Italy, it has a very large base, the petty bourgeoisie of the towns and cities and the peasantry. In Germany, likewise, there is a large base for fascism. It may be said, and this is true to a certain extent, that the new middle class, the functionaries of the state, the private administrators, etc., can constitute such a base. But this is a new question that must be analyzed. Well, I think that we've seen that, and I think that's what we're seeing now. I think a lot of the Tea Party has been the petite bourgeoisie. I think what Tom said, it was about 35 people you said there.
Yeah, that was Cy Proctor with 35 people at that demonstration. Most of them were Tea Party.
Well, yeah, that's what it was for. But the original one, I didn't go last year, but the original one in 2009, I would say there was probably at least 300 people there.
Those numbers that they gave in the News Gazette were in the hundreds for the last couple of years prior to this year.
Okay, yeah, that was, I would say 300, maybe 400 at the very first one that happened. And As I understand, the last big thing that they were supposed to have in Washington ended up being hardly any people there. It looks like this one in Madison, Wisconsin was probably the largest of any of them. But meanwhile, you know what's been happening? Is that there's been 10,000 people in Washington, D.C. for Earth Day, which has been, like, not covered at all. You know, I mean, it's really disgusting. And I think, really, maybe one of the reasons people are seeing through this stuff, you know, maybe the American modern petite bourgeoisie is a little bit getting a little bit smarter than the Italian bourgeoisie was in the 1920s or the German in the 1930s.
Yeah, and I really hope so. Maybe they are seeing. I mean, it's just things are so blatant. They're being pushed so far. One of the things that I was really heartened about this week, and it was a link that I put up on Facebook, and the comment that I made, the status update that I made with it, was that I was really happy because I'd seen this article. And it was the article that said there was 72% of the people of the United States want to tax the rich people. And it also said by large majorities that the people of the United States do not want to cut Social Security or Medicare or Medicaid. You know, and I really think that people are finally, I'm really hoping that people are finally coming around and realizing that their best interest is not throwing money at rich people. That they have finally, after 30 years, have figured out that they are not being trickled down upon
being
by money.
Trickled on, but not that way.
Well, it's like the old saying, and maybe I could find this somewhere, but it's Charlton Heston in a movie, and he says, don't piss down my back and tell me it's raining.
Right.
Oh, yeah. And actually, you can say that on the radio now from what I've been hearing lately. But, I mean, it's just, you know, it's taken that long, but maybe people have been figuring out. And I've been seeing this a little bit more in my regular conversations with people. The other day, I was at Tapman Village in Monticello, and I was talking to some older ladies there, and we were kind of discussing these things, and I was bringing ideas like this up, and they were saying, yeah, I think you're right, you know. And I think one of these ladies might have lived through the Depression, you know, had that in living memory. The other day, I had a job Monday, and there might be one person listening who might recognize the person that I'm talking about, but I was talking to a guy on this job, and I do a little bit of describing just to say he's probably somebody who is probably solidly middle income. He also farms, which means that in one sense he is a business person, because running a farm, having a farm, is actually a business. And you know, and he would be, you know, sort of the person that you would think that, at least in the past, would just be so worried about taxes going up because he would be afraid they'd be talking about his taxes. But we're talking, and you know, it's like, it's our work. You know, a lot of our work is, well, as a matter of fact, the job that I had worked on that day for this contractor is a University of Illinois library storage building, a tax-supported job. You know, and a lot of the work around here is, you know, university related. And the main work that's been going on in this area has been road work, which is all government work. And he was solidly in agreement that we need to raise money on wealthy people. You know, and I believe that one of the standard questions has been raise taxes on people making over $250,000, because that would be rescinding the Bush tax cuts. I've also been happy to hear Obama at least say that he's definitely going to do that, even though he really blew it when he had the chance.
Yes, he did.
You know, now he's got to start from the beginning. I mean, oh, man, I don't know. They did that in December. He's been talking a little tougher lately, but I don't know if that means anything, you know. But at least the American people are getting wise. And I think that the next elections are going to show this. I think that there's going to be a lot of recalls in Wisconsin. This deal where this woman in Wisconsin with the election, I can't remember what her position is, but she worked on a county level.
The county clerk.
She
stored the votes on her own personal computer.
Right. Here's 10,000 votes that I lost. Oh, yeah, here. And 7,000 of them are for the guy I used to work for.
Yeah, and she wouldn't let the county IT people look at her personal computer?
Yeah,
She's the only county clerk in the state of Wisconsin that stores votes on her personal computer.
Yeah, you keep hearing these Republicans over and over and over. They're so worried about voter fraud, and they want voter photo IDs, and it's like, there's never any cases of voter fraud, but there's one hell of a lot of cases of election fraud having to do with Republican public officials. You know, people used to think that Chicago was bad. I mean, it's the entire country now. It's anywhere where there's a big important election that Republicans are think that they could credibly cheat on. Who, apparently, they will.
Who was the Secretary of State in Ohio back in 2004? Blackmun or something like that? That
he was an African American.
Robert Kennedy accused him of stealing 400,000 votes there or something like that?
Yeah, that wasn't his name. Blackwell?
Something like that.
Like that. Oh, yeah. Ohio, I mean, it was just, it's just ridiculous. And don't, you know, we're not like Democrats here. I don't know about Bob. I'm not a Democrat myself. I don't think Bob is. And I don't think
very independent, I would say.
Yeah. I mean, the best thing
we... pretty much what we are, independent.
Yeah. But I pretty much say that about the... Democrats aren't as bad for us in a lot of ways, except for the ways that they are so insidious and allow and keep saving capitalism over and over and over.
We're still,
even if they have to use socialist ways to do it.
We're still stuck in the same wars we had when Bush left office, you know?
Yes, that's right. And like
the
I said,
he started.
Yeah.
You know, even though Barack Obama's like, oh, yeah, we have to raise these taxes and nobody's going to touch Social Security. I got an email recently where even somebody that I thought was halfway decent, and that's Dick Durbin. And in fact, I think I'm going to call his office, and I would suggest all of you do. He's getting in, he's lining right up with this stupid deficit commission.
Yeah, he's one of the gang of six, isn't he? That's looking to compromise on this whole deal?
And I was hoping that he was at least an honest, halfway honest man. I'd had a decent impression of him. But it
he
is
had
just,
an appearance at one time, but I think he's thrown that off.
Well, it's just dishonest to talk about Social Security when you're talking about the federal budget, because Social Security is not part of the federal budget, and if you cut back on Social Security, it does not help your deficits at all. That is just ridiculous. That is a lie. Anybody who talks that way is just lying. And I'm sorry, Dick Durbin is lying if he is doing that. I just can't believe it, and Obama's trying to sneak that in. I don't know why they keep wanting to tear down Social Security. Is it the threat of a good example?
Evidently.
You know, see, that's like the Veterans Administration. Yep. You know, and constantly, I'm reading constantly, every time appropriations for the VA come up, Republicans vote against increasing the budget for the VA.
Yep.
You know, the veterans, the troops that they just love to send into battle.
Right.
You know, but and you think, God, are they just that cruel of people? Well, yes. But also, many of them are Ayn Randians, which I'm going to get into a little bit. But it's because I had a friend who ran out of his insurance, you know, his job insurance, and he needed some medical treatment. And he was a naval veteran.
Yeah.
So he went over to the Danville VA office and hospital, and he wasn't expecting much out of it, you know. And he said that he was treated very well there. He was very impressed with it.
Good.
But you know why they don't want it to succeed? Because it is a government-owned and operated healthcare system. And if it did its job really well, then it would make the private system look bad. It would be the threat of a good example. Just like if we would have had rapprochement with Cuba after their revolution and went ahead and traded with them, right? And they would have had Castro was not really a full-blown communist until we blew him off. Like in most situations like that, redistributing land and so on and so forth. Cuba had been actually run by the American mafia.
Right.
So there was going to be a lot of wealth redistribution. But if we would have worked with them, then that would have been the threat of a successful socialist state on our doorstep. So we couldn't have that. So we've had this stupid embargo. But as far as Republicans just being downright mean and ugly, you know, I suppose best thing that you could think of is look at Ayn Rand, who has been talked about a whole bunch this week because of the release of this movie based on her novel Atlas Shrugged, which I have not read. I did read The Fountainhead about 30 years ago, but and I've seen that movie.
It was about 40 years ago when I read Atlas Shrugged.
Yeah, but if it's anything if like the fountain, like The Fountainhead was, if you hadn't read the book, you would have no idea what was going on.
Right.
And but it's like Ayn Rand. One of her heroes was a terrible multiple murderer named Hickman. This man, for one of the people he killed was one of his partners in crime. Then he kidnapped a 12-year-old girl. I believe this is in California. And apparently he had written down, had wanted to dismember somebody at some point in his life. So he had this girl and he held her for ransom, sent her dad a ransom message, wanted $100,000. Well, he went ahead and killed her. Then he cut her in half and took and placed pins in her eyes so that her eyelid stayed up, so that when that top half of her torso was seated in the car, it looked like she was alive and awake. And then pulled up, met her dad, and got the $100,000 from him, and then just flew, opened his car door, and flung that half of her body out on the ground right in front of her poor father, who just totally freaked out. And Ayn Rand greatly admired that man. She admired him because he cared for nobody but himself. And that was one of the things that she wrote into The Fountainhead about Howard Roark. Howard Roark, I can't remember the exact quote. It was like, Howard Roark was born without caring about other people. Because that is the whole point. One of her major books was The Virtue of Selfishness, which I read about 30 years ago. And it's the usual capitalist thing you hear. Usually it's called enlightened self-interest. You know, well, she didn't make any bones about it. It's just selfishness. If you're out and you're dog eat dog, well, that's going to have the best outcome. Well, no, it's not. Because if that worked, we'd all be using Commodore Amiga computers right now.
Yeah.
And all you old video producers, remember the video toaster, would, you know, sympathize with that.
So can you see that movie around here, Bill?
No, you can't. And I heard that you heard somebody call into another radio station about that.
Complaining that you couldn't see it in this area. The closest place was, I don't know, somewhere down by St. Louis or something like that. So.
Well, I don't know. I think there. I was Googling ticket sales for it yesterday, and the top results were having to do with Fandango orders, where it was like number three in orders from Fandango. So what I'm wondering is if there's some kind of organized effort to make its sales appear to be really big. But as which often happens with right-wing books. You know, some organization will, right-wing organization will order like 100,000 copies of Andrew Breitbart's new book or whatever. So it jumps up in the sales list, and then they'll just give them away to their members.
You know, there you go. Any other closing thoughts there, Tom? I guess
not. You woke me up.
All right. Thanks, as always, to Bill's commentary. You are listening to the Illinois World Labor Hour. Here.
And I hope all of you big-time capitalists go galt and leave us, and then we'll set up Soviets in your factories and run them ourselves. We'll do it by community.